Hello, I'm Mark Steiner.
I'm Anthony McCarthy.
Who are you again?
Anthony McCarthy. Oh, there we go.
There he is. How are you, man? Before we jump in here, I want to remind everybody that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, that offers a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, you can go to www.mecu.com. Remember, this is a credit union, not just a bank, which means it belongs to you. You can also get more information on the bank at steinershow.org and click on their banner on our website. We have a lot to talk about in the course this first hour. We're going to be joined by Congressman Elijah Cummings as we run up to President Barack Obama's State of the Union speech.
Very important speech
on Tuesday
tomorrow.
Night. Mm-hmm. That Anthony will be back for on Wednesday with several other guests to do analysis and talk about what that means for us. But before we – so we won't get – we'll wait till the congressman joins us before
That's
we jump
right.
into that. But we talked about a few things. One was this New York Times article that was in the Saturday New York Times that was shocking on one level, Anthony, and not shocking on another level.
You know what, Mark? I think on an anecdotal level a lot of folks that I talked to in the last 48 hours were not surprised by that story.
Which
essentially said that African Americans more than double have been, by foreclosure experts and banking experts, been pushed towards bankruptcy. And I think it's a Chapter 13 bankruptcy more than the other levels of bankruptcy that whites tend to be advised to settle these debts and these problems. And it shows that there is this disparity that they claim could be conscious or unconscious in a lot of people's minds. But when you talk to the experts, they all seem to understand and agree that when it comes to this and other financial issues, that African Americans seem to be getting the short shift in advice and counsel, which has a long term and
right.
lasting impact
right.
on their ability to have access to credit and to rebuild their financial standing. It was a disturbing article, but very, very enlightening.
That African Americans, even if they're making the same income level, have similar
same
credit,
education.
Same education, same similar credit records, mm-hmm. are given higher mortgage rates, then advised to take bankruptcy, lose their house when they go to file Chapter 13. And that's very disturbing. So the question is, people who commented, experts who commented things like, they're not surprised at the results, as you just said, but people say things like the Journal of Empirical Legal Studies – and their piece said, I don't think there's any overt conspiracy,
That's
says
right.
Professor Lawless. But when you have a complex system, these biases can play out, and the people within the system don't see the pattern because nobody's in charge of looking at these big items, which to me just screams about just systemic racism that is embedded in the system and in people's brains.
And I think when you have experts giving people an out – and not offering ways that you can begin other than on the Mark Steiner Show and the public square, the ways that you can begin to address this and put triggers in place and put other – I don't want to say benchmarks, but put things in place that keep people constantly reminded that they have to, especially when you think about the long-lasting impact that bankruptcy and other financial dealings can have on the rest of your life. It seems to me there has to be these triggers put in place that really keep people aware of the decisions that they're making and the advice that they're giving.
I mean, it almost cries for somebody to, you know, how they used to have these people who are looking for the equal rights in housing,
oh, yeah.
BNI and other organizations,
mm-hmm.
would send people out to rent a house. And they send a white couple out to rent the house and send black couples out to rent the house.
Mm-hmm.
And invariably what happened is that the white couple would be able to rent the house.
That's right.
And the black couple with the exact same income, family structure, to move in to rent a house is denied the house or charged a higher rent.
And, Mark, as much as people think that we have moved past
right.
those kinds of incidents or they're becoming – and they are probably becoming more and more rare. I mean, just last week something very similar happened to me and a friend. Both of us looking for a place. I called, but I had people in the background, some kids that were making quite a bit of noise. And the person, before I could even get the words out of my mouth, said, we have no more properties available. And I said, oh, okay, thanks. The person that I've been looking for the property with called and was given about three or four properties. And I mean called within hours. Three or four properties that were available. And whether they were discriminating about the fact they heard children in the background or what, there are a lot of these shenanigans taking place.
And let's get a couple of quick subjects here, then we'll open the phones right away before Definitely. The congressman joins us in about 25 minutes. The other one was that this is, I know it's a couple of weeks ago, but it's just been kind of silly to me. When Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake refused to allow the president of the city council to join her, took away his tickets.
Had given him tickets.
Took away tickets for the Ravens game because he criticized the Grand Prix, saying, you don't think Baltimore should be investing in that.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, and, you know, people know that I've been involved in politics and certainly have worked at that level at City Hall as an assistant to a mayor, two mayors actually, in the city of Baltimore. It really surprised me at how petty that was. And even the comments of her spokesperson, who essentially said, well, you know, Jack Young, the president of city council, had supported the Grand Prix, has seemed to change his mind. And I guess when we get another contract and have another Grand Prix, he can change his mind again. Almost just belittling the council president's decision to say, look, maybe we need to, instead of in reinvesting millions of dollars again into the Grand Prix, that has proven to be a great, you know, a PR boon for the city without question. Economically,
at least that, right?
Yeah, economically, we took some really, big hits. And then to respond to the criticism by allowing, and I want to give her the benefit of the doubt because I've been in the mayor's office. I know how things work. I hope it was an aide that made the decision to recall the tickets that were given to Jack Young and not the mayor. But, you know, Jack Young just laughed it off and said he still went to the game. Obviously, someone offered him to come to the opportunity to come to his box.
But then poor Jack Young, I mean, to not think that you can't take tickets from come people on. to go to a
well,
box.
There's a lot.
I mean, you know, I mean, it's just you would not go, oh, wait a minute, a little bell would go off. Yeah. No, I'm not supposed to take tickets from people.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think sometimes they have to be reminded of the parameters to which public service does put limitations on a lot of things. Now, unfortunately, not too many things. But there, you know, I just found it to be, and it was newsworthy. People say, oh, that's not newsworthy. Well, it is. When we're talking public policy, when we're talking about the dispatch of public taxpayer dollars, and there is an ongoing conversation and debate where people are taking different positions, and your way of getting back at them is to take football tickets away from them. You invited them to participate and come to the box, and then you take the tickets back. And worse yet, I thought that, as I said, I thought that her assistant, her spokesperson, Ryan O'Doherty, just petty in his comments about the city council president's
and
position.
And finally, well, the phones here is that many people are talking about Governor Martin O'Malley being a president for the United States of America, 2016 election. The New York Times called him one of the leading contenders.
That's right.
For president of the United States of America. I'm curious what folks think about that.
And the Baltimore Sun did a piece on his travel as the head of the Democratic Governors Association.
Second term there,
reelected, raising a lot of money for that organization and Democrats across the country, as well as being an advocate and surrogate for the Democratic Party as the Republicans seek a nominee. Governor O'Malley is one of the most popular advocates and surrogates for the party. He was in South Carolina, and then he had to rush back to do some legislative work in Annapolis. He and then had to go somewhere else, and I'm sure he'll be in Florida advocating the position of the Democratic Party. And, of course, it really does. Like Mark, I said this to you after our Annapolis summit. I mean, just his demeanor. First of all, he's grown enormously into that office as governor. He really comes across as a statesman. That's not something we could always say about Governor O'Malley or Mayor O'Malley, but really a very distinguished acting player in this Democratic game. And I watched him and I saw president written all over him, whether he could win or not, but certainly run. Just his demeanor really has really grown and impressed me, really, at his presentation at your Annapolis summit.
Let's open the phones, 410-319-8888. And Aaron, you're on the air.
Well, how you doing, Mark?
Hey, Mark.
Well, Aaron, welcome.
Well, first of all, in regards to your last statement about Martin O'Malley running for president, I would vote for David Duke before I'd vote for Martin O'Malley to be president of these United States.
I don't think I would take it that far, but okay. I know you would. I know.
Absolutely. I would vote for the Grand Wizard of the Klan first. That's how bad I see him.
Okay.
And in terms of the mayor and her football tickets, she's shown herself to be a petty, despicable human being, and she's using a box that doesn't belong to her but belongs to the people of this city. And for that, that's an outrage that she would even use the people's property that way. But it shows her how petty and vindictive and just an outright and evil person, nasty, immoral character she is.
Well, I'm not sure if the taking away the tickets rises to the level of evil, but it certainly is petty. I agree with you about that, Aaron.
It's not hers.
Well, technically, it's not hers, but it is given to her as
one. Yeah, that belongs to, paid for by the people of this city.
Yes, right. You're right. You're right.
It doesn't belong to her, and therefore for her to do that.
But the people can't use the box, that's for sure.
That's right.
Side of her. Mm-hmm. And as mayor of this city, that's unbecoming, and she doesn't deserve to be mayor with that kind of attitude.
All right. Aaron, thank you so much. I mean, I think people may be upset, but I'm not sure that.
Yeah.
I think it was very petty. I think that that our administrations have to rise beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
And the Grand Prix is a very real issue, and it should be discussed, not just dismissed.
I agree. You know, on the other hand, I've even taken note. I wrote in one of the editorials for the Baltimore Times this week about Occupy Baltimore and the most recent police action involving the state police. And I really have to compliment this mayor, even though she has obviously no jurisdiction over the state police. I think that when you look at, Mark, what has happened across this country with the Occupy movement and the protests, where there have been some horrible, near fatal interactions with the police over these encampments. I think our mayor acted with a great deal of restraint. I really do. It was very impressive. And I know that other people around the country were watching extraordinary restraint and gave every deference until she made the decision that it was time to do away with the encampment. But there were services there, buses there to take people to shelters and other places. So, you know, on one hand, I definitely see what Aaron is saying about the pettiness of this issue. But certainly a woman who is maturing into that very, very difficult role running this city, it's a very difficult role.
Take a couple of callers here. 410-319-8888. Reverend Napata, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. It's Brother Zaki. How you doing?
Zaki, how you doing?
I'm fine. I was listening to your show, as I always do, and you're broadcasting from Morgan State University.
Right.
And my mind goes back to the Urban Institute, to Dr. Homer Favor, along with the other Groom's Club members, former Congressman Perrin J. Mitchell, you know, Dr. Benjamin Qualls, people who I consider, you know, not only friends but also teachers. I live two doors from Perrin. Congressman Mitchell. And the point I'm making is this, is as when I listen to the discussion in relationship to the type of, Jim Crowing, I'll use that term, of blacks in relationship to Morgan's bankruptcy and a whole range of other things, you know, my mind just goes back to that Dred Scott decision. I mean, our teachers taught us, you're talking about Governor Martin O'Malley becoming president. If you look on the lawn of the governor's mansion in Annapolis, you will see a statue of Chief Justice Roger Taney.
Taney, right.
Taney. And Taney wrote what? He was the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and he wrote in the Dred Scott decision, an African man who ran away from slavery, found himself in Missouri. The Missouri Compromise, as you know, said that there would be no slavery allowed in the Missouri Territory in terms of them becoming a state. So he thought he was free. A Union soldier served and inherited him as property in the South and moved to Missouri. But in short, the decision that Chief Justice Roger Taney wrote, and that big statue, a colossal one, just like the one on Madison and Charles, sits on the lawn of the governor's mansion.
Right.
And basically, in short, the decision was a black man has no right that a white man is bound to respect. Now, I said it to say what? I said it to say that when we talk about how we've been treated, I used to work for the American Friends Service Committee, working right next door to BNI, that did those tests that you're talking about. And they did a tremendous job, and if we went around, we'll see some similar types of results as Anthony was talking about. The point I'm making is, as an institute of higher learning and critical thinking, it is incumbent upon Morgan, you know, and black universities, as the black universities are suing the state of Maryland that the governor chose to go forward with, that Attorney General Gansler chose to not settle in relationship to the funding and duplication of programs as related to historical black universities. And so what I'm saying is, and I'm through, thank you for your patience, what I'm saying is that we still have that type of systematic racism. After the riots in 1968, there was a Kerr Commission report, and basically it said that there are two Americas, one black and one white. 20 years later, they assessed that the same thing. So when you look around at the type of uneven policies, you know what we did as activists. That was a Community Reinvestment Act where we shut banks down. Providence Bank, we shut it down. We had seniors in line with the build organization changing dollars for pennies and getting back in line changing pennies for dollars in relationship to their red district, their red district in the black communities and their loaning, lending practices. So all I'm saying is I would hope that on these airways, as in the larger arena, that we don't just have a discussion a mile long and an inch deep. Governor O'Malley will be a travesty.
Well, very quickly, Doc, before I go to another caller, do you think the discussions are a mile long and an inch deep? Is that what you're saying? Ducky?
I think as a student, when we started that station out there, and I was one of the students.
I know, but that's not what I'm asking. I'm asking you, do you think...
The point I'm making is sometimes there are discussions that are off the chain, that are brilliant, like the new Jim Crow. I mean, there are different ones, and I have a right to opinion, I can be wrong. And then sometimes there are discussions that are just criminal. I mean, there's no depth to it. I mean, all we have to do is look at structure. Baltimore has been gentrified. The gentrification process continues. D.C. is the same thing. The major metropolitan cities have been gentrified. And that means that after the riots, black folks were moved out.
No. I hear you. I understand what you're saying, but that's not what I'm asking.
My question is, so when are we going to have those types of in-depth discussions, not just to have dialogue or happy talk, but to engage the university and the students and the faculty and the community in the type of critical analysis and action?
Okay. I guess what I'm saying to you, I think that and I'm not saying this in a defensive sense at all, but in reality is, sometimes you have political discourse like we're having today, which kind of covers some of the news, and we get into some more depth in the next hour. I think those issues are covered in great depth here a lot. Whether it's the housing issues about our schools, about our children, about gentrification, about how we develop our city, what kind of future we want, with some very serious thinkers and activists. And I think that happens all the time here.
When you do that, you do excellent programming and broadcasting, even though there are not a lot of students, mandated to get out there and have their radio programs, which was part of the mandate.
But it has nothing to do with that. I mean, But
all I'm saying is that until you look in the mirror, Mark, and I'll stop here, look in the mirror and see that on Morgan Station, 2 hours in the morning, we have Amy Goodman with Democracy Now. Good program.
One hour.
You got that every morning, right?
Yeah.
And then in the evening, we have Mark Steiner, who's a brilliant brother, a revolutionary committed, an activist, but you don't have the mindset of an African-American, and I think that's a missing link, and I will always say that.
Okay, cool. Docky, thank you, man. And I've known Docky Napata for a long time.
I have as well.
So 410-319-8888 is the number here, and I think there is an interesting balance in the station. It has been for a long time, and I think that... it's important to have that balance, and I think you have those voices coming through at 7 o'clock and all during the day. And
I hear it when I'm out in the community. If I'm speaking at a church, if I'm speaking at a school, if I'm talking to a civic organization, people thank me and this station constantly for the depth of the coverage of the issues that are impacting our communities. And we do. We certainly play a valuable role. This station, this show. And I hope that my show also plays a valuable role in bringing some diversity of thought and opinion. And I think our listeners are very astute, and they read through and they hear. My grandmother used to say, "Eat the steak and spit out the fat." And they know what they believe, and they share it with us every day.
So let's hear some more of our listeners. 410-319-8888. Clarence, you're on the air.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Clarence.
Welcome.
I happen to wake up in the morning with Democracy Now. I feel like I'm better informed by that than I will be by any of the others. And I turn it off with the voice of civil discourse and reasoning and fair play with Mark Steiner. In any event, I'd like to say this. I just view the whole thing down in City Hall as being just out of whack. Corrupt to a degree. I don't know how corrupt. I'm not part of the in crowd, but there's something wrong down there. You can have a race. You can race it around the harbor all you want, but please paint the traffic lines in the rest of the city so when we're driving on a day like today, we can see which lanes we're in without having to peer over the steering wheel. The other comment I'd like to make, in the reference to bankruptcy, I think that if somebody were to really look at a house that, say, appraised when you bought the thing at $100,000 and you file for bankruptcy for whatever reason and an appraiser comes out and automatically adds another $50,000 on top of that, and you go to bankruptcy court and you've got a lawyer there pushing you to walk away from it, you see how this house of cards gets built again before and the bankruptcy courts pretty much pass that through, because here you have real value, which was the original value, as opposed to what somebody can make it.
Right.
About, yes. So, you know, this seems like on a massive level throughout the United States, if what you were saying is true, that they're building the House of Cards again.
And the House of, I think the House of Cards is being built. I mean, one of the things that we're going to ask the congressman in the next half an hour when he comes on to join us to talk about the State of the Union speech that's going to be given tomorrow night by President Barack Obama, is the apparent deal that's about to be announced between the federal government and the banks that were bailed out, that they only have to give $25 billion back. X amount of that's going to go to mortgages, but that's not nearly enough. And that a lot of that money can come from investors, not the banks.
And not the banks themselves.
Mm-hmm. And there'll be no investigations. No investigations. And I think that what you're saying, Clarence, and what other people are saying is we need to get to the bottom of this. There needs to be the clarity like there was with Watergate and everything else, get to the bottom of what happened. And if bankers have to be prosecuted and the banking industry has to be changed and reformed, then that's what has to happen, because it's affecting working class and especially people of color more than any communities in America.
And I think that the part, Martin, I know we have other callers that we want to bring to the air while we have this opportunity before the congressman comes on. I think that it is so clear. And what Clarence said is really it speaks to the relationships that a lot of these banks have in this process, that we will overestimate the value of some of these properties that the banks are taking control of, and will, if they're lucky, they don't really want to be in the resale business, but that they will put those houses back on the market at a higher value and make more than just the foreclosure amount. They're going to make an enormous amount of money off of the misfortune. And as we see in this study, greatly disproportionately, African Americans are being impacted by this. And so, as Doc Key said, this is the kind of conversation we have to have, and we have to dig deep.
Right.
I think we're blessed that Elijah Cummings actually has the time today, of all days, in Washington, and so much going on, that he will be here. And I know we're going to ask him the questions that the people need to.
And you can ask the same questions.
That's
here,
right.
At 410-319-8888. And if we have time, we'll talk a little bit about this article that hit me very deeply. Let me get the phones here, which is it's the Sunday Times. It might not appear to be important, but it really is. It's about Apple computers and where they make the computers. It's called How the United States Lost Out on the iPhone Network, on iPhone work. And what's clear is that the jobs have left. Mm. These worlds are not coming back. It charts out where the jobs are in 1960, where they are now in 2012. And it's something that we have to really address, because America is economically sinking.
And I think that conscious people will make better informed decisions if they have information like that's in that story about Apple and the iPhones.
Let's go to another call here before we take a break. And you guys, when we take a break, if you haven't gotten your call, you can hold on. We'll take your calls when we come back from break, and you can also have a conversation with the congressman when we return. And Halim, you're on the air.
Oh, yes. How y'all doing?
Very well. Welcome.
Okay. The two subjects that you got on the table, I think by law, when you give a person a gift, you can't take it back. Am I correct?
No.
That's not true.
No, you can't give it back.
Mm-hmm.
I say you can't take it back.
No, you can. You really can't. I mean, those tickets, the dispatch of those tickets are at the discretion of the mayor. Because she controls the usage of the city's box.
Was it considered a gift?
I'm not sure.
I don't think it's considered a gift. I think you just invite people to come into the mayor's box to watch a game.
To socialize.
Anybody. Mm-hmm. You could be invited. I could be invited. You know, Cassandra
Monsanto
could
be invited.
Then you're disinvited because you disagree. Okay,
right.
I understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's petty, and it's tool of coercion to make force individuals to yield to her vision, even though the vision is unfounded. You know, whatever. You know, now, as far as Martin O'Malley becoming the president or the front line to become the president, it might be true and it might explain why so many African-Americans are willing to do his bidding, even though he has done virtually nothing for our community. You know, I point to the fact that he had a policy of arresting African-American males for just standing on the corner. I point to the fact that he reduced funding for the educational systems in Baltimore City and Prince George's County, while at the same time he increased it for Montgomery County and Baltimore County. And I point to the fact that he's going forth with a lawsuit with regards to duplication of systems at Morgan and Bowie. So what has he done definitively earn him the loyalty of the African-American community?
Other than what you said about, I mean, I think that the issues you raised are true, other than the decreasing of the money for schools. I don't think that actually happened, but the others did happen.
It was in the budget. We had to fight to get it, to prevent it from happening.
Right, but it did. But it's, I'm saying, but it didn't happen. So, I mean, I think the problem is,
and I think it was a decrease across the state for education dollars, not just Baltimore.
Right, not just Baltimore.
Yeah, but in his original budget, he increased the funding in Montgomery and Baltimore County.
We can argue, but I think that's actually didn't happen. But the real reality, Halim, I think, is that. You know, as long as I've been doing this, and when I hear the critiques of people like Martin O'Malley and others, and I'm not saying what you said isn't, you know, spot on in terms of some of the critiques that people have to wrestle with and think about and push, is that they amount to a hill of beans unless people organize in a concerted opposition to actually do something.
But we're not going to organize to do anything because individuals in power use their coercion to make people yield. And they don't have the guts or the backbone to stand up and demand some type of compensation for their representation. They just yield. And
right.
And we, as a people, we've been oriented to just vote Democratic. No matter how they treat us, we're going to go that way anyway. So there's really no reason for them to change the way that they did.
All right. Halim, thank you so much for your thoughts and comments and being part of our show.
Thank you.
Good to hear from you, man. We're going to take a brief break. Anthony McCarthy and I will be right back. Elijah Cummings is our guest in the next half an hour. And Russ in Baltimore, the next caller up. So, Russ, if you can hold your thoughts and calls, and you have a lot to say as well. So we'll talk to the congressman and then open the phones back up at 410-319-8888.
Holding back the thinking of the fear I've had so long. When somebody hears, listen to the fear that's gone.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And, of course, as we went into break, and we'll hear a bit more of her during the course of the hour, we heard the lovely voice of Etta James, a 76 leftist, a couple of days ago. She was an incredible woman, incredible singer.
Great spirit.
Great spirit. Mm. Came through a lot. And we just had to hear her.
Yeah.
And I'd like to hear a lot more of her. So we are about to have a conversation with 7th District Congressman Elijah Cummings. And Congressman, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Good to be with you.
Elijah, welcome. So I think we're getting a little reverb back there so we can get that undone so we can hear the congressman. we're here. Are you still with us, Congressman?
Congressman Cummings?
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, we're here, Congressman. Can you hear us?
Yes.
Good. There we go.
All right, good. Thought we lost each other for a minute, but we didn't.
Boy, I got a bad signal here.
Yeah. So there you go. So, Congressman, let's begin with what is happening tomorrow night with President Barack Obama and your thoughts about what's going to happen.
Well, I think basically, first of all, good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
And I think basically what's going to happen is the president is going to pretty much lay out very briefly, you know, where we've come from. And that is, you know, where we were when he first took office and the efforts that he's made already. And then I think he's going to basically lay out a blueprint for what the next 4 years will look like if the American people were to reelect him. And I think he's going to basically say that we've got a situation where the job, the unemployment rolls are, you know, coming down to 8.5, and we've got significant job growth over the last couple of years. And I think he's going to talk about consumer confidence is ticking up a bit, and basically try to lay out put it out there that the path that we're on will lead us to a better day, that we're not there yet, but it's going to take some time because he had such a difficult ditch to dig out of. And I think that's pretty much going to be what he's going to talk about. And he's going to then say, you know, I need your help. And I think he's going to pretty much dare the Republican Congress to, basically say, you know, I need your help. And it's going to look as if, not as if, it's going to show up pretty clearly that the Republicans are not with him and will not be with him. And I think, therefore, the only thing I guess the speech can be for is trying to, you know, like, as I said before, lay out a foundation for what is to take place over the next 4 years.
So it sounds as if, though, you're saying, Congressman, that the president's going to, it sounds more like he's going to give a campaign speech than it's a State of the Union speech.
I think that he's going to talk about the State of the Union, and he's going to say that the State of the Union is not exactly where he wants it to be because of the economy. He's going to say that it's getting better, but then he's going to, I think it's going to be basically a campaign speech to lay out, you know, to provide for his audience, probably some 43 million people.
Yeah.
You know, exactly what, if he were to allow to continue his course, would he be able to accomplish? You got to keep in mind, Mark and Anthony, that this president has achieved a lot under maximum opposition. And so I think he basically is going to be more or less a speech where he is going to be letting it be known that, you know, that he needs help. And he hasn't gotten it, but hopefully he'll get a Congress and get a mandate in his next election to finish the work that he's already started. And I think that's basically what it's going to boil down to.
Congressman, I want to ask you about a lot of people say, Democrats have been saying this president has accomplished a lot. But there have been times when African-American leaders in particular have accused this president of not being aggressive enough in drawing the line in the sand with Republicans. I remember the video from a town hall meeting with Representative Maxine Waters, where she really took the president to task and got some pushback. And, you know, have you at all been disappointed by the level of a progressive agenda, an aggressive agenda to attack the problem with joblessness, the problem with foreclosures, even the wars that we are engaging in around the world. It seemed like the president was not moving as fast as many people had anticipated, given his aggressive stance on the wars when he campaigned.
Well, I think that's an outstanding question, Emily. And I, too, have said to the president, to his face, that I thought he needed to push back harder in many instances with regard to the Republicans. But let me try to break this down for a moment. You know, the president said that he would come to Washington and he would try to change the way business was done in Washington. And if you'll recall, Anthony, when he first got here, he put his hand out to the Republicans and said, you know, let's work together. Basically what they said was what Mr. McConnell said is my number one goal is to make sure you don't get a second term. So I don't think he wanted to be accused of not reaching out. And it took him a long time, I think, to figure out that he was not going to get any help from the Republicans. And then, you know, with regard to African Americans, I think the president's stance has always been that he didn't want to just appear to be the president of the African American people, but he wanted to be president for all people. And a lot of times, African Americans, I mean, even the Congressional Black Caucus said, well, we agree with that. But we also want to make sure that if you're going to aim assistance, for example, helping people who don't have jobs, at least, you know, don't forget about black, white, or any other color. Make sure you target programs where the most need is or where the greatest unemployment is. And you'll automatically help folks who are in dire straits. And a lot of folks felt that he was not not wanting to be seen as just the president of African American people, that he shied away from even doing that. But I think the president, I think he's learned a lot. I think that he is, I think he's done a lot with regard to jobs. And are we where we need to be? No, but I think he's done quite a bit.
Let me open the phones, Congressman, let some folks join us here. We're talking with Congressman Elijah Cummings. We're reflecting before the fact on the speech that will be given by President Barack Obama tomorrow night, the State of the Union speech, which we'll be covering in some depth on Wednesday during our program. Anthony McCarthy will be joining us again with other guests. Number here is 410-319-8888. The Congressman is with us till the top of the hour. And, Russ, you're on the air.
Greetings, Mark, to you and to Congressman Cummings.
Hello.
What I'd originally called to talk about has kind of slipped by the wayside, but I would like to say that the citizens of Baltimore have to be aware of something. In the old days, we used to say, as long as you keep doing what you're doing, you're going to keep getting what you're getting. We just had an election for mayor and president of city council where both were elected with less than 40,000 votes in a city of 500,000-plus people.
Right.
And based on some numbers that I saw, the turnout with people who were making $20,000 a year or less was somewhere around 12%. So what do we expect? Now, let's move forward because I really love Obama, and I hear what the Congressman Cummings is saying. But under Bush, we lost over 2 million jobs over an eight-year period. So it would take him 2 million jobs just to get to the break-even point on the basis of what went down.
Yeah.
These are jobs that you just remarked earlier in the conversation that are gone. They're not coming back.
That I remarked, right.
They just built the interconnector down there. If you look at the construction crews for a road construction operation, they didn't put in any toll booths because they're doing the tolls electronically. We have to get used to what the people in New Orleans call that new normal and understand that if you're not getting an education in this society, your chances of getting a job are slim and none. And before I run out of time, Mark, I hope you guys will put a mailing address on the air because I need to get a letter to Anthony on the basis of our conversation last Friday with American Exceptionalism. I don't want to take up this time to do.
Well, I recall that conversation.
And I thank you guys very much.
Thank you.
I would like to hear you talk about where the jobs supposed to come from with the advances in technology and the loss of jobs overseas and 2 million under Bush. Just kind of clue me in on where these new jobs are going to come from.
Thank you, Russ.
Thanks, guys.
Congressman.
Well, one of the things that the president just proposed is giving tax incentives for these folks to bring jobs back to America. And that's been something that he's been pushing very hard for. And, of course, he's been pushing for infrastructure jobs. The Republicans, this is something that Republicans have always been for. And as he said, because he now proposes what they proposed in the past, they are suddenly against these things. And I tell you, Mark, sometimes I wonder why it is that when this president proposes things, again, things that, I mean, he's basically taking their playbook and giving it right back to them, and they say no. And I'm sure we can all draw our own conclusions with regard to that. And sometimes, you know, I look at situations, say, for example, in South Carolina, where you have a phenomenal unemployment rate, but when it comes to job bills and things of that nature, their congressmen and senators would not vote for a jobs bill to save their life. I'm just hoping, you know, when you start seeing people voting against their interests, and I see it in the Congress all the time, I wonder who they represent.
Well, Congressman, one of the things that I think that the president may speak about tomorrow night, and by the way, we're talking with Congressman Elijah Cummings, my colleague Anthony McCarthy, and I here on the Mark Steiner Show talking with the congressman. The number is 410-319-8888. We'll come to those calls coming in here in just a second. The people are writing that he's going to announce a mortgage settlement by federal regulators with the banks that were bailed out and at least some of the state's attorneys general, not all of them. And there are a lot of people who are looking at this is going to be announced as a real a boon and blessing for the American people because $25 billion may come from the banks, though what's turning out, it seems like that only some of that money is actually going to go to mortgages, not enough to really cover them, and that this can come from the people's investments in banks, not in terms of the bank's real money itself, and that the banks will not be prosecuted. There will be no investigations that could lead to prosecutions of banks and wrongdoing in this financial economic crisis that we face. And it's going to be parlayed tomorrow into kind of a win-win for America. So I wonder how you see it.
I'm hoping, I just did a lengthy interview on this, Mark, with regard to this settlement, because it's something that I've been all over. I'm not anxious to see the settlement. On the one hand, you know, you like to see a settlement because you want people to be punished and you want things to finally be resolved. But I agree with the Attorney General up there in New York, Schneiderman, who's basically said that he's not going to go along with any agreement because he feels that there's more investigating that needs to be done. And he does not want to let the banks off the hook when we don't know the full extent
right.
of their unethical activity and the ramifications of it in the future. And so I'm not for the settlement. I just think the banks have basically admitted to wrongdoing. There has been, in my mind, criminal activity. There has been activity with regard to these banks that they have admitted to, that would cause lawyers to be disbarred, I'm telling you. But nobody's been disbarred. A few people have been fired. And this will let a lot of people off the hook forever. And, you know, I really question whether, you know, when you're talking about a settlement, tens of millions of dollars to a bank, to banks, that's like suicide money. So you wonder what kind of real punishment that is. And I think you were implying, from what you just said, that, you know, that money is probably coming from their investors anyway. So,
right.
I mean, what's the point? So I just think that we could have gotten, I'm hoping that they don't announce the settlement. I'm hoping. And I understand that Gansler here in Maryland is still trying to figure out whether or not Maryland wants to be a part of that, from what I understand. And, you know, I'm encouraging him to take a deep breath, to, you know, to join in with the fellow up there, the Attorney General up there in New York, and actually look very carefully at what has happened here and make sure that this is a settlement that is fair and just to all.
Congressman, before we go back to the phones and try to get a few more callers in, I do want to ask you something. It's an overtly political question, but I've been watching with great interest the surge of the former Speaker of the House to victory in South Carolina, Newt Gingrich. A lot of play from his former Republican colleagues, particularly the ones who are supporting Mitt Romney, talking about his temperament when he was Speaker. And they say it's really inconsistent with the kind of temperament and leadership we should be looking for in a president. I know you served with him. I had the honor of being on your staff in Washington. Give me your thoughts on his temperament. You know him well. You served with him.
Yeah.
He may be the nominee of the Republican Party.
Yeah, I think Newt Gingrich, and he described himself quite well when he said he comes up with these grandiose ideas. And he says a lot of things, Anthony, that really are not presidential. And, you know, I just don't think that he is a person who has the temperament to be president of the United States. And Anthony, the reason why so many Republicans are fearful that he might become the nominee is that they believe that if he is at the top of the ticket, not only will he lose, but the folks down ticket will lose too. In other words, that the House will become will be turned over to Democrats, and the Senate will too. But in talking to all the experts around us here on the Hill, they tell us that there's no way that he will be the nominee, no matter what. But I tell you, at the rate he's going, I don't necessarily buy that. There's one other thing that I think we need to listen for very carefully with regard to Newt Gingrich. If you listen to him, he is using those statements like, food stamp president.
Right.
Talking about going before the NAACP and talking about African-American kids mopping the floors of the schools and things of that nature. I think he is playing to the worst side of Americans. And I think that he is playing, the card that he's playing is one of divisiveness. And, you know, here we have just celebrated the erection of the Martin Luther King Monument and all that he did, and then to have someone to interject this kind of conversation on a presidential level in 2012 is to concern all of us. And I can tell you that in talking to my independent friends, those people who are independent, they tell me it's no way that they would vote for Newt Gingrich. They don't want to go there. They don't want our country to go backwards with regards to race or anything else. And so I think, you know, I think I've often said that the voters are wise, Anthony, and I think the voters will see through this.
Let's get a caller in here before the Congressman has to go. We have to move to the second hour at 410-319-8888. And Tyrone in Catonsville, you're on the air.
Yeah, how's it going?
John? Good, Tyrone. Welcome.
Hi, Tyrone.
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, with the president giving tax breaks to bring back our manufacturing base, we supposed to had a recession supposed to end in 2007. It's a jobless recovery, okay? And then one of the primary reasons is that we've yielded our manufacturing base, and along with that goes jobs. And a lot of people don't realize, I mean, we get wild by the technology and all that. That's all great, but we should be able to do both. I think the United States should dominate in technology and in manufacturing. And we didn't give up farming because of the industrial age. We didn't say, okay, we ain't got a farm anymore. We got the industrial age. No, you don't do that. We should never yield our industrial base to China, places like China and India. That's ridiculous. Our industrial base is what helped us win World War II. People forget that stuff. Okay, and also a lot of the innovation comes from right off the manufacturing floor from people that aren't even engineers. And a lot of people don't realize that either. We think all this stuff comes from engineers. No. it helps us get a technological edge by having people manufacture things, because a lot of new innovation actually comes from the manufacturing floor. People figure out ways to make their jobs easier, et cetera.
Okay.
And you learn to make things products better.
Well, one of the things that the president is going to talk about tomorrow is making sure that we shore up our manufacturing base and preparing our people to take on manufacturing jobs and jobs that involve innovation. And so he's not going to leave that out of his speech, and it's going to be interesting to hear what he has to say. I know he has a part on there talking about our community colleges, but he's going to spend quite a bit of time talking about manufacturing.
Tom Carson coming.
Yes.
I can think of plans off the top of my head that closed in the past 5 years. One is food and machinery. The other, this is chemical. You had Sweetheart Cup Company, and I think there was a Pepsi-Cola plant that closed. And all of that, those hundreds of jobs.
Yeah,
with those jobs are families, hundreds of families being put out of work.
Right.
We only have like a couple minutes left for the congressman, so let me let him kind of wrestle with what you just said. Congressman?
Hello? Yes.
Go ahead.
I did not hear him. I'm sorry. I apologize.
I'm just saying I wanted you to kind of go on because we only have a couple minutes left, and I think that let me tag on to what Tyrone was saying. I mean, do you think very quickly that we can recapture this manufacturing base, or is this just an illusion we have because it's great for sound bites, but it's not there?
Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be very difficult to recapture a manufacturing base, and the reason being is that, you know, manufacturing is based, you know, the reason why we don't have a lot of these jobs is because it's so much cheaper to do it overseas. And these companies go where the profit is. And some kind of way, we've got to make it profitable for companies to do business here in the United States. And that's one of the things that the president has been pushing on. That, when he talked about bringing jobs back, when he pushed for these batteries, for these cars, the manufacturing batteries here in the United States, trying to figure out niches, so that we can have manufacturing that makes sense here. A lot of times it's cheaper to get stuff from overseas and ship it over here. So we've got a lot of work to do there.
Congressman, it's always a pleasure to have you with us. We'll look for your face tomorrow night on television as the president speaks, and look forward to talking to you again very soon.
I'm sorry, Mark. I just cannot hear you. I'm sorry. I apologize.
No, that's all right. I just want to say we thank you very much for joining us tonight, and we look forward to hearing your thoughts after the speech and staying in touch with you.
Okay. All righty. Bye-bye now.
Take care.
Anthony McCarthy and I will be back here in just a minute or two, and we will take a look at this issue and many more with your help at 410-319-8888 and our guest coming up. So please stay with us and don't go away.
Wrapped up in clover.